Last week, the Albanese government put into effect a ban on social media for under 16-year-olds. The ban includes Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, to name a few apps, with all accounts held by under 16s completely removed.
Professor Daryl Higgins, a psychologist and director of the Institute of Child Protection Studies at the Australian Catholic University, joins us on the line now. Good morning, Daryl. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, you signed an open letter last year opposing the social media ban. Has your opinion changed, or do you still believe the government should not have implemented the ban?
I believe that it's a missed opportunity, that there are some additional things that we should be thinking about. But firstly, I do think it is important that we address what we know can be some really harmful features of social media platforms in terms of not just their addictiveness and therefore their ability to take children and young people away from other more productive and, you know, educational and relational activities, but also the direct ability to be able to inflict harm, whether it's in terms of bullying, whether it's in terms of, you know, harmful content such as, you know, people use phrases like the manosphere, and you know, sexually inappropriate and harmful content as well. So all of those things I absolutely acknowledge, and I also acknowledge parents' concerns that they're wanting help with supporting, you know, their young people to have safe experiences online. But I do believe that that it's important that we think about not just the technological solutions here to delaying the ability of young people to have their own media accounts until they turn 16. And instead, or certainly as well, now that we have implemented the ban, the most important thing is to be able to support them with good digital literacy around what safety looks like, around how to understand and interpret whether someone on the other end of a gaming console or you know, a social media reel is in fact, you know, another 13-year-old girl, or is it a 45-year-old male? You know, those are the kind of things that we need to be able to build in the skills. And of course, for parents to be supported in having those conversations, that they are social media savvy as well.
Yeah, so just to be clear, your position is against the ban. You don't think it should have been implemented, is that right?
That's right. I do think that there were other ways of being able to address the concerns that we have without going to this as a sole measure. Instead, I think the investment should have been put into education, supporting parents, being able to help young people regulate, and putting safety features in. You know, what we know is that have the ability to turn off or dial down the kind of addictive algorithms and the harmful algorithms. And unfortunately, the effort wasn't put into those solutions first to see whether they actually bring about some of the things that we hope to come from the social media delay. But now that it's here, we have to make sure that it's the best it can be. And so we still have to provide that education and support for young people themselves, and importantly for their family.
Now, Professor, do you believe that individual freedoms have been limited through this ban?
Look, that's not my main concern, although I do absolutely acknowledge that there are some young people who are probably more vulnerable and who are going to be differentially impacted by this. You know, we know that there are many people for whom online engagement was their safe space.
Yeah.
So that might be neurodivergent young people. It may be those in, you know, rural or very remote areas. It might be young LGBTQIA plus or questioning young people who are finding their tribe online and find, you know, meeting friends in real life is really challenging, and being able to connect with them in a virtual way is really good for their mental health and well-being as well. So there are some potential downsides to this delay for different groups in the community.
Absolutely. And how would you like to see sort of an alternative strategy for child protection implemented in regard to social media and the internet?
Absolutely. The first thing that has to happen is we have to have safety by design. And I really applaud the eSafety Commissioner for her work in championing this. But we haven't done enough in that space, you know, and it does mean pushing back on companies that are making a lot of money by being able to kind of, you know, monetize the relational connections that young people have forged online. So we need to think very carefully about that and whether we're allowing big tech to be able to, you know, define the childhoods of, you know, many young people nowadays.
Professor, sorry to interrupt. Sorry, I'm just mindful of time, but I'm 21, so I grew up on social media, and I watch the effects of it on my peers. You know, the anxiety it can cause, the cyberbullying. Some of my peers struggled with body image and eating disorders, likely caused or at least exacerbated by the content they were exposed to at such a young age on social media. Yet you're still adamant that we should allow, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-olds on these sites?
No, I have a very nuanced understanding. I think that we have to be very careful about this. I don't think a blanket delay is the only answer. I think our investment should have been put primarily into calling tech companies to account and making sure that it's a safe space, that we can have safety features built in by design and not allow profits to be able to trump, you know, the ways in which we operate. And clearly there are strategies that can be done. You know, the fact that there are channels for kids shows that we can make systems safer. And in fact, if we do that, adults will have safer systems as well. We know that the same problems exist for adults. And so we still have the same problem when children turn 16 and are able to have their own social media account, that those algorithms are still likely to be perpetrating harm when they turn 16 if we haven't done something about it from both a technological point of view and from a preventive education and supportive perspective.
And finally, Professor, do you have any advice for teenagers who might feel isolated by the lack of social media communication? I'm thinking particularly for those who maybe are in rural areas or for those who feel maybe underrepresented or they can't exactly find their people sort of in a real life setting.
Yeah. Look, my message is you are valued and loved, and you can find ways of being able to connect with those who do demonstrate that love and that value that you have. So we know that the ban or the delay in being able to have your own account is going to be a difficulty, but that doesn't mean that you can't still search for content that is helpful for you and that you can't use other platforms that have not been banned to be able to recreate some of those positive connections in a way that are safe.
Thank you.
Daryl, we really appreciate you speaking to us today about the social media ban.
My pleasure.
And if you're a young person listening and struggling with loneliness or anxiety regarding what we discussed today, you can reach out to Beyond Blue on 1-300-222-4636 or the Kids Helpline on 1-800-551-800.